Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, Andy Katz, can catch his work on the NCAA.com. Also, you've seen him all over television from his time at ESPN to this March Madness, sitting there with Charles and Kenny on the set, the CBS Turner broadcast. Andy Katz joining us. What is that set like with Charles and all that? What is it like off, like during commercial time?
Exactly the same. They are just three genuinely real, warm people. I was so appreciative that they welcomed me into their family seamlessly. And they were great. I mean, literally, what you see on the air is what happens off the air. It's just the conversations sort of just spill onto the air. There'd be many times where we'd be talking, and then suddenly, you know, we're on the air. I mean, like, it literally just sort of, maybe there's a pause, but a lot of that was what, you know, what happened during those couple of weeks.
So much fun to watch, Andy, and see you, obviously, and your career and the trajectory of it and follow it. And, you know, the Pac-12 had a great tournament. Was it a one-off? What do you make of the Pac-12's performance in this tournament? Can they sustain this? Is it a good conference, or did they just get good matchups and hot teams?
No, I think we were all a little, I think we all undervalued it. You know, in large part, as you remember, there was a chance they weren't going to play at all. Then they were going to play any non-conference games. And so they were kind of like lagging behind everyone. And, you know, maybe they didn't have as many high-profile non-conference wins. And maybe that took away. And Arizona taking itself out, I think, affected a little of the perception, because they've always been a consistent contender. And then the pauses, like at Oregon, USC had one for a little bit. But ultimately, a team like UCLA, who I picked preseason one, which, of course, that could change 1,000 times, but, you know, they just needed more games to play. And by game, whatever it was, 20-something, you know, they finally clicked. I mean, they had to twice sort of reset who they were when they lost Chris Smith and Jalen Hill. And so, you know, McKinley Wright is a senior at Colorado. He led his team with limited turnovers. You know, and they get to the second round. USC has so much talent. They get to the Elite Eight. Oregon did its Oregon thing by getting to the Sweet 16. And, they're, you know, they have always been good in March. And then Oregon State, you know, what a run by Wayne Tinkle. Unbelievable to win the Pac-12 tournament and then get all the way to the Elite Eight.
Elite Eight, yeah. Yeah, everybody was really excited about that. Arizona not being part of it felt weird. Sean Miller, did Arizona do the right thing with Sean Miller? And where do they turn now, Andy? Where do you think the right move for them is, pivoting out of the Sean Miller era?
So, yes, I thought they did the right thing. I don't like to advocate for someone to be fired, but you know, I just did not see this happen continuing long term. However they were going to, you know, stretch this out, I just couldn't see it happening long term. And, I mean, look, they had an assistant that went to jail. So you knew there were NCAA violations, let alone, you know, something criminal. And, you know, at some point, at the very minimum, which still may happen, Sean Miller was going to get a coach control thing. Lack of institutional control, that's going to happen. He, you know, there still may be show causes that are handed out, but so there's going to be penalties. We know that. To what extent, we don't know yet. So this just made sense. You know, I knew there was sort of a battle with boosters and the president and the AD, and I didn't think they wanted to pay him 2 years ago with 4 years left. I think he has got two now that they're paying, which is much more palatable. So, look, I know that the Arizona NBA alums would love one of their own, and there are plenty of candidates. With Damon Stoudemire, Portland people know him well, who's a Pacific. And, you know, obviously Josh Pastner, Georgia Tech, Jason Terry, who's an assistant, you know, Miles Simon, who's a Lakers assistant. I don't see Steve Kerr or Luke Walton leaving current NBA head coach jobs to do it. And then if they go outside the family, you know, there's a lot of big pull for Eric Musselman, but I have a hard time seeing him leave Arkansas because I think Arkansas would back up the truck. And you're going to a program right now that you don't know the sanction situation. And then there's Tommy Lloyd, who's the Gonzaga assistant. And there's a strong tie with Jeff Stevens, who's a big booster of Arizona. His son was a walk-on or a manager, excuse me, at Gonzaga. And so he's a big Zag booster, too, so he knows Tommy really well. So I wouldn't be shocked if that they went in that direction. But I think they may do the Carolina-Michigan play and try to keep it in the family.
Andy Katz with us. You can see him on his work on NCAA.com. Also, you saw him during March Madness on CBS and TNT. Also on the Big Ten Network as well. You're all over the place. How about, let's talk about Gonzaga. Was that Mark Few's best shot? Because, you know, it looked like they just kind of ran out of gas and they ran into a really good team in the final. But is that his best shot?
I wouldn't say that yet. Because last year, had there been a tournament, they would have been a one seed. You know, will he get a player like Jalen Suggs again? That's hard to say. If they get Chet Holmgren from Minnesota, he's going to be the best big man in the country next season, at least certainly as a freshman. So, but they need another Suggs-type player to complement. We'll see if that happens. So, no, I wouldn't say it's definitely not his only shot. I guess we'll have to wait and see if that was his best shot. In 2017, you know, they had a great shot to knock off North Carolina. They couldn't close that deal. But Baylor was definitely the team that was the worst team for them to face. And I know it sounds armchair quarterbacking to say that, but they really did match up well against Gonzaga in terms of their physical aspect, their size, their rebounding ability. And, of course, they were burying in threes at the beginning, and that was quite a knockout punch. And I think I'm probably part of the chorus of people that got a little romanticized by the UCLA-Gonzaga game. I almost like blanked on how good Baylor looked earlier in the night against Houston. And because they clearly were the best team of the four on that Saturday. But we were all so, you know, mesmerized by what happened at the end of Gonzaga-UCLA that it's almost like we forgot how good Baylor was.
Andy Katz with us. I won't keep you long, Andy. I know you got another interview coming up on the NCAA site, but let me just ask you. You know, you've been at this a long time at a high level. What was it about college basketball that drew you in? Because you have become the go-to in college basketball, and you have for as long as I've known you.
So, well, I mean, look, it started when I got my first job in New Mexico, covering a program that, you know, treats it like it's the pro team. I mean, that's where I started as a professional. But in college, you know, I went to Wisconsin in the late 80s, and Big Ten basketball was great then with the Flying Illini in 89, and Michigan ended up winning the title that year. Indiana won it my freshman year in 87. I was at a triple overtime game between Indiana and Wisconsin. So that would have been Steve Alford's senior year. So I was hooked then, but I also grew up around it. My dad was a longtime professor at Boston College. And so I grew up, you know, when I was there, Tom Davis and then Gary Williams were the coaches. John Bagley was playing for BC. And I used to go to all those games. At that time, by the way, you had Rick Pitino at BU, Jim Calhoun at Northeastern. And then you had Tom Davis and Gary Williams at BC. So that was like, and that was the beginning of, you know, really when the Big East was taken off. So like that hooked me early, you know, in my life and ultimately in my career.
Andy, love having you on. I'll let you go. I know you got other stuff to do. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Hey, I appreciate it. Be well.
All right. Andy Katz, there he is. You saw him on CBS and Turner TNT. He has to do his real job right now at 140, so I promised him I would cut him loose then. But we'll get him back on. Good stuff from him. It's interesting on the Arizona front. I'm, of course, tuned into this, and you may be as well, because it's a Pac-12 team, and it's compounded by the fact that I think Damon Stoudemire would be a really good fit at Arizona if they're going to go the route that Michigan and others have gone and sort of keeping it in the family. It feels like that move from Sean Miller needs to go back to the Lute Olson era. And, you know, players like, you know, Miles Simon and Damon Stoudemire certainly come to mind there. Gonzaga, and, you know, you look at Tommy Lloyd at Gonzaga as, you know, Mark Few's worst-kept secret on his staff as a recruiter, and you have to kind of wonder, you know, would Gonzaga back up the truck? I no longer see Gonzaga as some kind of, you know, Cinderella program, nor should you view them as some kind of outlier. They are, you know, they would have been a one seed a year ago. They were a one seed in this tournament. They played in a couple of national championship games. You can kind of pencil them in to your Final Four in a lot of years and not feel stupid doing that. I just wonder how aggressive Gonzaga will be in trying to keep that thing together. That thing being the dynasty that is Gonzaga basketball. Because it's no longer a cute little story with, like, Dan Dickow and Richie Fromm running around out there making threes and upsetting teams. This is a highly touted, highly favored team that, when you look at their makeup, it struck me during this last tournament as I kind of looked at, you know, the makeup of their roster. I was like, these are kids who would normally have gone to, like, Duke. Like, these were Mike Krzyzewski kids. Like, I could see Grant Hill playing for Mark Few. Like, you know, if you could time travel him to this era, it just felt to me like Gonzaga's kind of got something else going on here. Now, I wonder how they will pivot out of getting their teeth kicked in by Baylor, because all Baylor did is make a bunch of threes and play tenacious defense and make everything hard for Gonzaga. Bad matchup for Gonzaga in the end. And you can tell me, and I'll buy, that Gonzaga was a little flat or maybe a little spent coming out of the semifinal against UCLA. But I really don't think that mattered as far as who wins the game. It may have affected the outcome, the score of the game, the way the game started. But I don't think it really, 7 times out of 10, I think Baylor wins that championship game. How will Gonzaga react to it? Will they lose their chief assistant who will go to Arizona? Or will they back the truck up, so to speak, to keep him? I also like to just see Arizona go with Damon Stoudemire, because I think it's his time and I think he'd do a great job. Leave it here. The Culligan Water Cooler Report is next. I'll never forget being a coworker with Andy Katz back in the day. Gosh, it was probably 23 or 24 years ago. Andy Katz was a beat reporter who was covering Fresno State basketball for the Fresno Bee. Jerry Tarkanian was the basketball coach, of course, and Katz was there and covering the program. And it was back when, it was before the times when, like, everybody had a cell phone. You had a work cell phone that the paper owned. And I'll never forget, like, I didn't have a phone. I got there and Andy Katz was working, covering the Fresno State team, and had been through hell. And I remember having a meal with Katz, and it became evident while we were talking that he was getting ready to leave the newspaper. He was going to go to work for ESPN. And had this conversation with him and this meal with him, and then his phone kept ringing during the meal. And it was like, it wasn't like, you know, his sister calling him. It was like, literally, like Digger Phelps calling, or it was Tark, or it was, you know, some other great basketball coach, Roy Williams calling him, or whoever, you know, trying to find out what's going on in college basketball by calling Andy Katz. Well, Andy Katz left the Fresno Bee to go to ESPN. He left his phone behind, and the editor at the Fresno Bee said, "Hey, do you have a phone?" And I said, "Nah, I don't have a work phone." And he said, here, take Andy's phone. Just use this. And it really became a problem because I became a message service for about 2 weeks. And I will never forget the phone ringing and me answering it. And on the other end of the phone line, it was literally like, hey, it's Digger Phelps calling for Andy. It's Dean Smith calling for Andy. It's like all of these connections that he had made in covering college basketball. It was evident why ESPN wanted him because he was so well connected to all the coaches. And there are different ways as a beat reporter when you cover a team. And you're probably tuned into this. A lot of you who watch a lot of the national writers like, you know, Ian Rappaport or Adrian Wojnarowski or Andy Katz who cover their sport on a national level. Okay, you watch Adrian Wojnarowski on the NBA. The reason why Adrian Wojnarowski on the NBA is so successful is that Woj is hardworking and smart, of course. Really good writer, underrated as a writer. But Adrian Wojnarowski figured out early on that his angle would be agents. Okay, so he has gone out and really cultivated relationships with agents. And he is tight with the agents. It's why he knows who's getting drafted where. It's why he knows the trades before they go down. I mean, he's a master at cultivating agents. Andy Katz is a master at the cultivation of coaches. And Katz is tuned into a lot of the same stuff that others are, except he's getting his information largely from coaches. Coaches trust him. Coaches know that other coaches talk to him, so they go to Andy Katz because he's sort of got that coach avenue locked down. So when you are watching Ian Rappaport or Adrian Wojnarowski or Andy Katz or these national reporters do their thing, pay attention to that. Ask yourself where they're getting their information. It is evident and it's interesting to watch it develop when you see sort of the spin on the reporting, especially from Woj on the NBA. And you see that his reporting largely is not going to be critical of agents. It's not going to be overly critical of players unless it's obvious. And his relationships with the GMs are going to be cozy as well because that's how he's making his living. He's embedded himself with agents and the general managers. Andy Katz, much more tuned in, and I think it's obvious in that interview he just did with coaches and sort of what coaches are saying and thinking. And pay attention to it, because I think Andy Katz gave us a real moment in that interview where he essentially said, look, there's a cozy relationship between the Gonzaga booster, who's also an Arizona booster. So Tommy Lloyd's certainly in this conversation, but he's advocating and pressing for a former player at Arizona to get the job, much in the same vein as some of these other schools he mentioned, including Michigan and Juwan Howard. Keep an eye on that. He's also tweeted out that he thinks Damon Stoudemire would be the pick at Arizona. I think Andy knows more than what he's letting on. Keep an eye on that. All right, every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. And as part of that, we stand around the water cooler.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right, let's kick this around. Let's stand around the water cooler. We have been through a sports season that included some fans in the arenas and the stadiums, or no fans in some cases, guys. High school sports have been hit and miss. Parents not allowed into venues. Do you guys find it interesting that the colleges themselves in the Pac-12 haven't been proactive about getting people in their community vaccinated? Like, you know, normally, like, we all look at it sort of like as an Oregon health thing in the state of Oregon. We look to the governor's office, the Oregon Health Authority, and we look for the, all right, where do I get my vaccine? How do I sign up? But if we're going to have fans inside Pac-12 stadiums, do you guys find it interesting that, like, the actual Pac-12 schools themselves are not set up to be sort of like, hey, we're going to be a vaccination station. Like, shouldn't they maybe consider being in that business or in opening their arms to say, hey, come down. We can make Autzen Stadium. We can make Research Stadium this great vaccination site. And it makes me wonder kind of where we're going to be in the fall if we're going to be back in stadiums. Will the universities ever play a role in this? Guys, let's kick this around. I know it's just something I'm spitballing here, but I'm kind of looking at the fall now, and I'm going, okay, we're in April, May, June, July. Like I hope that we're back in stadiums by the fall and everybody feels safe. But I'm kind of wondering right now what that's going to look like. How about you?
Well, not only just stadiums, but what about on-campus enrollment, right? Like on-campus classes. I would think that's incentive enough for, you know, state-funded universities like Oregon State, et cetera, to be on the front foot, you know, promote. Gosh, everybody's promoting themselves as vaccination sites and resources and vaccine here, blah, blah, blah. I'm surprised the universities themselves are not as aggressive as they could be in that regard, not just for stadiums, but for getting students back on campus themselves. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm tuned into that. We've got a high school senior in our household. She will enroll at one of the colleges that she chooses. It's kind of an ongoing thing, but it's she's going to enroll. And I'm curious, like, okay, are we going to be is she going to be in person? Is she going to be on campus? Will she be in a football stadium along with other students come the fall if, you know, she is vaccinated and they are vaccinated? And by the way, will that be a thing? Will it be required? You have to have your vaccination to be inside the stadium as a fan. Zach, your thoughts?
I hope it doesn't get to that point where we have to, you know, present a proof of vaccination to get into stadiums. I don't agree with that personally. I will say, though, Patrick just called, and he wanted to let us know that Autzen Stadium is a vaccination site
wow.
right now. So
okay.
I'll look into that. But, yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't get to that. I mean, you know, medical information, especially, you know, disclosing it publicly and all of that, it's very private stuff. And
we interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.